Faith. Faith, what is it that we have faith in? Faith in our practice? Is that the Lucha Loud? Faith in our way of life? Faith in coming here? Faith that we can eventually end our own suffering? Along with faith, I think that there's a very interesting companion, which is confidence. So in Pali, there's a word called sada, which means faith. And it is the initial acceptance of Buddha's teaching. One of the things that he said, that has been sent down from time to time over the years, is once he resolved the issue and decided to teach the Dharma, he said, "Wide open is the door of the deathless to all who have ears to hear. Let them send forth faith to meet it." So we need faith in this practice. So the other day when I was talking to Hogan, as the conversation ended, he said his advice was, "Have confidence." For some reason, that kind of struck me in a negative way. As he's been telling me the same advice for over a decade now, and I was beginning to think, how is it that I don't express confidence? What does he see lacking in me? And it made me kind of angry, actually. And then I saw Chosen in Sanzen here a couple weeks ago before they went to Europe. And the last thing she said as I left, she goes, "Have confidence." And I felt like, I do. What do I need to show you that I have confidence? So these short interactions propelled me to investigate this idea of confidence. But really, it's not new. I've gone down this path many times, so it was kind of interesting to review these past discoveries. I thought a bit about how do we show confidence? How do we exhibit non-confidence? A little bit, I wanted to go back and explore what it was like when I was growing up and becoming of age, because Chosen was talked a couple weeks ago, and she said that she was very optimistic when she graduated from college. Everything seemed to be going well. But when I looked back, my high school years, and probably some of you, same, we grew up in this time of uncertainty and violence and poverty, racial inequality. We had to hide under our desks, thinking that maybe a nuclear bomb would be dropped on us. Our president was assassinated while we were in junior high school. The country was awash with unrest. We would watch on television how the schools were trying to be integrated. And it was, as a young preteen and teen, it was like very confusing as to why this couldn't happen. Later on, the Vietnam War started to heat up. Our brothers and our boyfriends and our friends were heading off to war, or perhaps off to Canada to avoid the war. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Robert Kennedy was assassinated. He died on the day we were graduating from high school. Later on at Kent State, students were killed. Cities were burning. They were rioting. We grew up in a time of unrest. And then on the other side, there is this counterculture going on. There was some back to the earth, but the counterculture of the youth of my time was more of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So how do you find this kind of balance between a world out there that's all chaotic and violence and another world that is exploring and trying to avoid But when I look back, when we, my friends and I went on to college, and when we graduated, we were in the world of Nixon, and there was a recession, so there weren't many jobs. So the young people of today who are out, were looking for work and trying to make a living and trying to make a go of it, I can really relate to them in some ways. I think their world is a little bit harder. We were not particularly optimistic, but we were not particularly pessimistic either. Were we confident? We were confident. We had a strong feeling that we could be of benefit to the world, to the earth, and to people. Maybe we were a little naive, but nonetheless, we were ready to do something. And eventually we went on and we became teachers and nurses and engineers and mothers and fathers and therapists, gardeners, all those things, cooks, musicians. We took on the adult responsibilities of the time. And that was one side of confidence, self-confidence, feeling confident we could make our way in the world. How do we build that self-confidence? Sometimes through practice and repetition, study, chances to work, understanding similar situations, coaching, getting some feedback and help, corrections, determination, and continuation. What we did was fairly socially acceptable within certain bounds, and that adds to confidence. Of course, you always know there's some people that are outside of those bounds that seem to have more confidence than is probably good for them. But what is this confidence that Hogan and Chosen were talking about? This confidence in our practice. This confidence in the oneness of all things. This confidence in our true nature. Let's look at that and how we embody that. First, I think it's important to become aware of causes and effects of practice, the fruits of our practice, how our lives have changed because of practice, how our behavior changes, how our viewpoints are not quite so rigid. How did that develop over time with this interesting practice? So I looked in the literature and I found that self-confidence is widely talked about in Buddhist teachings and other Zen and Buddhist teachings. Why hadn't I noticed this before? There's something from the Dhammapada, some of the oldest teaching. Self-confidence. Do not depend on others for your salvation. Develop your self-confidence to gain it. From Sosan, a Korean Zen master. Neither lack confidence nor give rise to pride. Awaken to your own true nature. Originally, there's nothing. One must not underestimate oneself and lack confidence. This is from the teachings of Lin Chi, who is Rinzai. We know him as Rinzai. And this is from around 850s, 60s of this common era. The master instructed the group, saying, "Those who study the Dharma of Buddhas these days should approach it with a true and proper understanding. If you approach it with a true and proper understanding, you won't be affected by considerations of birth and death. You'll be free to go or stay as you please. You don't have to strive for benefits. Benefits will come of themselves. Followers of the way, the outstanding teachers from times past have all had their ways of drawing people out. What I want myself to impress on you is that you mustn't be led astray by others. If you want to use this thing, then use it and have no doubts or hesitations. When students today fail to make progress, what's the fault? The fault lies in the fact that they don't have faith in themselves. If you don't have faith in yourself, then you'll be forever in a hurry, trying to keep up with everything around you. You'll be twisted and turned by whatever environment you're in, and you'll never move freely. But if you can just stop this mind that goes rushing around moment by moment, looking for something, then you'll be no different from the patriarchs and Buddhas. Because these days we'd have to add the matriarchs, I think. So you want to know the patriarchs and Buddhas? They're none other than yourself. None other than you. The people standing in front of me listening to this lecture on Dharma. You. Students don't have enough faith in themselves. And so they rush around looking for something outside themselves. But even if they get something, all it will be is words and phrases, and pretty awareness, appearances. You'll never get it at living thought of the patriarch, only through this experience. Now, so that was Rinzai, 800, how many years ago was that? Almost 1,800 years ago, something like that? 1,700 years ago, talking about the same thing. The meaning of faith in Buddhism is the conviction that grows through your own direct experience with the teachings. This doesn't mean just hearing the teaching and liking it. Oh, I like that one. I agree with that. I like it. I'll keep that one. I don't like that one. I don't agree. It doesn't mean just hearing the teachings and liking it or even understanding it. It means knowing how the teaching applies and works in our own lives. In Zen, we tend to use the word faith to mean trust or confidence that the practice works, that the fundamental nature of our mind is awakened. And because of this, we can throw ourselves fully into practice without expectations. Practice then becomes an endeavor that isn't dependent on what it can do for us. We ourselves have the ability to practice and to awaken. So our trust or faith is not in something outside of ourselves. Or maybe it means trusting everything, including ourselves and our practice. Zen Master Dogen said, use this phrase, our whole faith-like body, our whole vow-like body. Katagiri Roshi said, this means your whole body and mind are exactly faith. Or we could say, exactly vow. He said, you cannot discriminate between you and faith, you and Zazen. Faith means tranquility, and complete tranquility is the source of our existence. All interesting ways to think about faith in self and the practice. Have confidence. The phrase, have confidence, that Hogan and Chosen said to me, now has more of a benevolent feeling to it instead of an admonishment. I see it more as a blessing. Benevolence. Go forth with confidence and faith. Or as Hogan often said, has said, have deep faith. After I'd been coming to Zen for a number of years and had developed a relationship with Hogan, I asked him to help me prepare for an interview to be a manager for the work that I was doing. It's in the field of vocational rehabilitation. And he still teases me sometimes about how unsure I was of myself. And I had no confidence in whether I could do the job. We worked on confidence, and I became very clear about my ability to do the work. And I did get the job. And I used lots of my Zen training and my practice in the real world. Over the years, though, Hogan would continue to say, have confidence. So I did a little more study and a little more looking. And one of the things that I found that was, I found that I resonated with really deeply was by Tori Zenji, who is the Dharma era of Hakuin. So I was looking, you know, I was doing an internet search, and I found this passage. It was Tori Zenji's Great Root of Self-Confidence. At first I thought it was Hakuin, but Hogan said, no, this is Tori Zenji. And then when I was up at Great Vow just recently, I saw the same thing, and they're almost exactly the same. It was Great Root of Faith, of Deep Faith. So they both are similar. So I wrote them down, and there are 10 of them, and I find them very, very, it was useful through my studies and through my practice. And I think they are the foundations of the vows that I developed over time. So I'll read them to you. The first one is confidence. This great root of self-confidence is Dai Shin Kan. Dai means big. Shin, S-H-I-N, is self-confidence of reality. And Kan, K-O-N, is root. I rewrote it a little bit to make it a little clearer for me, hopefully for you. A confidence that we all have the same inborn nature and infinite wisdom. It is the same that all Buddhas have ever, it is the same in us that all Buddhas have ever had. A confidence in the fact that each individual's religious ability or spiritual ability is the same. There is neither big nor small. Each individual's daily religious capacity or spiritual capacity is the same whether you're a fool or a wise person. So that all of those who go this way can achieve the goal without exception. So you don't have to be brilliant. You don't have to be intellectually astute. Everyone can, in the world of practice and in the side of spirituality, everyone is able to achieve this goal. A confidence that along with the deepening process of meditation, various kinds of delusions can easily occur. If one takes this state as the ideal state of the way, he or she may suddenly fall down and lose momentum and direction. So that if you cling on to some state and you say, this is it, I finally made it, I'm done, I've gone, I've made it, I'm all done, I can go home now. Meh. That's a delusional state, and it just means you'll end up almost starting over again. Of course, sometimes we have to go through those things. A confidence that when time has come, one's effort has fully devoted Buddha nature, when your effort is fully devoted, Buddha nature will be revealed by itself. So so that you don't need to use your intellectual judgment in this area anymore. Confidence that no matter how Buddha nature is suddenly revealed, unless a person has a chance to see a teacher and pass the gates set by ancient patriarchs, he'll walk through the wrong way in life. So it's so easy for us to get off track unless we have a teacher or a sangha group that will help us see what we're doing. A confidence that there is always one more small step which remains even after you have finished passing through all these so-called gates. There's still something going on. I find this extremely reassuring because this means this practice is a lifelong practice. That there's no, you get right here, this is the goal, this is where I'm going to go to, that's it, I've made it. No, there's always just one more step. There's something else to learn. It will always be unfolding. So when we know that, then we can relax and just let it unfold. A confidence in the matter that of Zen transmission. This is very significant that we should, all of us, transmit the lamp on to other people, the lamp or the light, and not monopolize it for ourselves. So no matter what small amount we know, what small amount we understand, we have a confidence that it's important that we pass that on and not hang on to it ourselves. And a confidence that each part of daily life is nothing but retraining our own dharma, we might say our own karma, and carrying that on through our daily training, continually, so that the dharma is not extinguished in the future. That is the fundamental responsibility of everyone, all of us. So I found this is totally reassuring for me, and I really incorporated it into my way of looking at Zen practice, this idea of confidence, great root of confidence or of faith. Faith is an important element in all the different schools of Buddhism. But sometimes it's just interpreted a little bit different. But trust in our experience, knowing how the teachings apply and work in our lives, a confidence that the practice works, which, as I said, goes beyond just liking words, but really understanding them. Another story which I think is important, and also kind of the opposite side of what happens to us with confidence, is a story of Wei Ning. Wei Ning is the sixth patriot in our lineage. So this is a long time ago in China, 638. He lived 638 to 713. So it's important, you might know his story, but I'm going to give you part of the story. There's lots of parts to the story. So Wei Ning was a illiterate woodcutter in the time of the Tang Dynasty. The Tang Dynasty was China's golden age of learning, arts, craftsmanship, and power, when education was the great sign of wisdom. But his lack of education, his literacy, illiteracy, saved him from the burdens of an educated mind. His lack of that kind of knowledge that was so prized in those days, as it is today, allowed him to understand without first having to metaphorically burn the scriptures, as so many other educated, pre-enlightened Zen teachers have had to do, and we may have to do. The teaching here is clear. Enlightenment or awakening is not about knowledge. Yet how much do we how much trust do we have in that idea? Do we ever see our lack of knowledge not as a failing, but as a gift? Our mind, of course, holds information to be paramount, necessary, and safe. If I can understand something, I'm safe. If I can prove it, I'm safe. So our mind has a difficult time allowing us to metaphorically burn up our knowledge. But this is what we must do in this practice. All knowledge, Zen teaches, is an illusion, just as power, wealth, possessions, and self-image are. So Wei Nang's story was that he heard the Diamond Sutra and had an enlightenment. He just heard it, an enlightenment experience. And he went off to, eventually, he put his things in order and he went off to study and he found the best, went to the best monastery that was going on in China at the time, Hongrun's place. Hongrun put him to work in the kitchen. So here he was, kind of just a guy that came in. They said, go work in the kitchen. He was in there for a long time. Not a long time, just 7 or 8 months. And they were trying to figure out, Hongrun was trying to figure out who was going to be the next successor. So he had this little contest. And there was the head monk who had some understanding. And everyone thought he was going to be the next successor. For some reason, Hongrun wanted to, he saw this, Wei Ning had a lot more understanding. So he had this contest, and they wrote a poem. Well, in the end, Wei Ning won the contest. His poem was much more to the point. Let's see if I have a copy of it. So this was the poem that the monk wrote. He said, the body is a tree of wisdom, the mind but a bright mirror. At all times, diligently polish it to remain untainted by dust. Wei Ning's poem said, the tree of wisdom fundamentally does not exist. Nor is there a stand for the mirror. Originally, there is not a single thing. So where would dust alight? His understanding was deeper. Well, this is going to cause some problems, right? So Hongrun had him come in, and at nighttime, he gave him the robe and the bowl, which are the symbols of transmission, and said, you're the one I pick, but the monks are going to be really, really mad. So my suggestion is that you take off in the night and emerge in a couple years when things have calmed down. So he did, but the other monks were upset, and they took off after him and chased him. And finally, they caught up with him. And he said, So the head monk had been a general in the old days. So he took on his general, you know, character, found him, yelled out to him, didn't say teacher, said workman, workman. He said, I come for the teaching, not for the robe. Teach me. What a moment. The crowd mentality of this robe is ours, this bowl is mine, my right, my possession, dropped off, and the authentic seeker in the monk was revealed. That authoritarian monk general gave way to the receiving monk. The need to possess, the need to control, the greed and desire that, as the Buddha taught, only lead to suffering, dropped off. And this monk, whose name was Hu Ming, was a beginner again. Teach me, teach me. For us, it is the moment when our ego is stripped away, the moment of our self-image, our specialness, our titles, and our knowing all drop. And we realize that we too are beginners. The moment we think there's nothing else for us to learn, we're headed in the wrong direction. Wei Ning then said to his first student, when your mind does not create good, does not create bad, what is your original face? So what he's really asking is, when your mind is still, when you're not caught up in mine, yours, right, wrong, fair, unfair, success and failure, who are you? Who are you? What's your original face? What's your true self? That monk general had practiced for a long time. So he was ripe, he was ready. So when that question came, that turning word, it helped him break through. That question, what is your original mind? What is your original face? Can't be answered by the ego mind. But when the ego mind is stilled, we can realize this. This is why we practice. But, and this is the important part, in this story anyhow, my story that I'm telling. After a few minutes of realization, all of a sudden, doubt is usually right around the corner. And at this moment, there was no exception. In the moment of his deep gratitude and bow, he said, besides that, those secret words, secret meaning, which really aren't very secret, that you've unfolded for me, is there anything deeper? Is there anything more? So how very human. Haven't we all been there wanting to know, just, isn't there something else you can tell me? It can't be that simple. There's got to be something more I'm missing. So trust and confidence in our insight begins to evaporate as doubt comes rolling in. Hu Ning heard the doubt and he met it. I have not revealed anything that is a secret. If you reflect on your original face, in other words, if you go beyond your self-created identity, and reflect on who you really are, you will find the secret is within you. So doubt rolls in over our own personal experience, and it clouds our own confidence and faith, confidence and faith in the practice in ourselves. So what I, my parting, my ending words here are, first a poem. The fog rolls in. At times doubt rolls in like the fog and insight is lost. The compass is forgotten. But we must return to the present moment. The fog lifts, faith is clear. We remember, there's no fire like greed, no crime like hatred, no sorrow like separation, no sickness like hunger of the heart, and no joy like the joy of freedom, liberation. Health, contentment, and trust are your greatest possessions, and freedom your greatest joy. Look within. Be still, free from fear and attachment. Know the sweet joy of living in the way, a way of faith and confidence. Now take that faith and confidence into the world. As one of the points of Tori Zenji said, a confidence that a matter of Zen transmission has most important significance. You all have some part of this transmission. This isn't it, sitting up here and talking. It's how you act in the world. It's how you take this practice into the world. One should transmit the lamp on and not monopolize it for yourself, for himself or herself. We cannot keep these teachings to ourselves, but give them freely. So how is this done? Let's look at the many ways we embody the Dharma. It's not particularly about getting up here and giving a talk or convincing people that you should do it this way through words. This is an invitation to transmit the light of the Dharma through whatever we do, at all times, everywhere. This is not impossible. It's an imperative of our practice. We transmit the light of the Dharma through our actions, our faith and confidence, whatever we do, whether we're in the kitchen, in the garden, taking care of things, chanting, driving the car, riding our bikes, sweeping the walk, parenting, going to school, going to work, wherever and whatever we do. Like Tori Zenji, our cup is full to the brim with faith and confidence. Take it out into the world as you embody the practices. My prayer is that you have faith and confidence and go forth. As Hogan and Chosen would say, have confidence.